We always chat with you weekly CFL at this time on this day, but we would be foolish to not just touch on what we watched happen earlier this morning from the All England Club as Vasek Pospisil has thrust himself into the final eight in the men's singles draw at Wimbledon and did so overcoming a huge deficit down 2-0 to Trawitzki, a Serbian who I believe is ranked somewhere between 20 and 30 in the world.
Yeah, and Viktor Troitsky, the big server, as you mentioned, you know, up 2-0. Pospisil had never before today, guys, come back from that deficit before, and he did. And in large part did because his serve was off the charts, and it really has been for the last 7 sets. You go back, and he was down 2-1 in the third round on Saturday, was able to come back, and I mean, the kid is just playing lights-out tennis right now. Beyond that one service game that was shaky early in the first set, and then in the second set tiebreak, he had a double fault and misplayed a lob. I mean, he was as flawless as you're going to see. And what a moment for this 25-year-old who, this is the wheelhouse part of his season. It's always June, July, August. Pospisil just takes off. And here we are again, right at the midway point of it. And he's off his first Grand Slam quarterfinal of his career, becoming the fourth Canadian to ever reach a Grand Slam quarterfinal.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he was a junior Wimbledon champion, and didn't he win doubles last year with Jack Sock at the same event?
He did win doubles last year, but no, the junior Wimbledon was Philip Pelevo, who won back in 2012. And Pospisil's best result in a major was the third round. Now he shattered that by 2 rounds. So he had gone up the rankings significantly by reaching the round of 16. Now these are all bonus points for him, which will really elevate his ranking going into the hard court season, which will help him in opening round matches and draws and buys and so forth moving forward.
Health-wise, where is he? I know that's been a big concern the last 16 months or so.
Yeah, and in large part, the back, you know, was bothering him for much of 2014, and he's fine. I mean, health-wise, he basically stepped aside. He was feeling something, a little hitch in his giddy-up in a grass court tune-up a couple of weeks ago. But this is the Pospisil when he's healthy. This is what, maybe not quite the quarterfinals of a major on a consistent basis, but there has been steady growth with this kid over the last 4 or 5 years. And he has done minor tweaks, you know, in the mechanics of the serve that has really helped him. His return of serve has helped him. But most importantly, the health is there. And for a guy who went through hell and back for about half of last season, he's finally found that, you know, knock on wood for him.
Want to spend lots of time on the Stamps this morning, but we'll start with the double overtime thriller from Regina yesterday. I don't know how much other leagues or other people would look at tie-breaking formats, but I don't know if it gets more exciting than what we saw yesterday between the Argos and the Riders.
Yeah, the shootout format in itself is, you know, is a thriller that was first introduced by U.S. college football. Then add into the fact that you can't kick an extra point after touchdowns. You have to go for two. And you got what you got yesterday. I mean, a pretty dull game for 3.5 quarters that really changed on a Kevin Glenn pick six, A.J. Jefferson taking it back to the crib. And the sequence of events that happened were remarkable. I rewatched, guys, I know not many people in Calgary are losing sleep over this, but I rewatched from about the midway point of the fourth quarter on a second time last night. And the series and sequence of plays in succession that led to that Argos win was just absolutely incredible. It's, you know, I texted somebody over the Riders last night. I said, how did you lose that game? He said, I don't know, but we did. I mean, that's the bottom line. But that's a heck of a road win for the Argos to now get to 2-0.
There's been some great games so far this season, Arash, but here we are, 2 weeks into the season. And I think the biggest story in the league has to be all the backup quarterbacks we're seeing.
Yeah.
Tell us about Trevor Harris, because it looks like he might be the best of the bunch.
Well, you know, there's an argument to be made, and, you know, you look for certain moments in games, Derek, and then what do you get? The kid gets the ball, down 7, 8 to go, 85 yards to tie this thing. And boom to Chad Owens, boom to Hazleton, boom to Gurley, boom to Owens, back to Hazleton, check down, and with 11 seconds left, very calmly found Chad Owens in the end zone. I mean, to go the distance, 7 plays, 85 yards on the road in that hornet's nest, in that crazy atmosphere, speaks volumes. But there were a couple things that actually, you know, you kind of wonder about. There were two touchdown passes that were there, except he short-armed them. On the flip side, nobody's talking about Kevin Glenn today. Kevin Glenn, who became the seventh most prolific passer in the history of the league. Glenn, who threw for 477 yards. Glenn, who threw for two touchdowns. As much as we want to anoint Trevor Harris, let's remember, Ricky Ray is still coming back in a few weeks, and Darian Durant is not. To me, before we quite, you know, crown Trevor Harris as the next one, I still believe that the best insurance policy in this league remains Kevin Glenn, and in a lot of spots yesterday, he showed it.
And we've seen it before here. I mean, if you go out and sign Kevin Glenn to be your backup, just assume you're going to lose your number one. That seems to be the pattern for the last, what, half decade for wherever Glenn's surfaced. He's turned out to be the guy, whether they really wanted him to be or not. He's a heck of an insurance policy that seems to be needed everywhere he goes. I want to get to the Calgary game. I had no idea who Rakeem Cato was until I opened the paper the day of the game, and there was some talk that maybe he would win some starts away from Brandon Bridge, or at least there'd be a battle. I think we know who he is now. How did this happen? What an incredible story.
What an incredible story. Well, first of all, you know, look at the credentials coming into this thing. He went to Marshall. He's the all-time leading thrower at Marshall University, a school that produced two first-round quarterback picks in Chad Pennington and Byron Leftwich. So there's that. But even beyond, Rakeem Cato didn't really know his father. His mother died of meningitis when he was a teenager, and he was all on his own. And he was all on his own through the combine process coming out of school. I mean, guys, last season he was playing in college. Didn't even get invited to the NFL combine. They said he was too small. They said he was too light. There's actually an ESPN story that said, unlike 99% of the world, Rakeem Cato doesn't like to eat. And because he was undersized, no one wanted to give him an opportunity. He had one little look-see in Miami, one in Cleveland. That's about it. And out of nowhere, this kid who, you know, barely won a job in training camp finds himself starting week two of the season and balls out the way he did. Just an unbelievable story of a guy who continued to be told you can't do it and continues to do it.
Yeah, it seems like this is the league forum. How many stories have we seen? Undersized quarterback piles up numbers, doesn't get looks in the NFL. Feels familiar.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the funny part is, I don't know, funny, he was on Saskatchewan's radar for quite some time. He spent 3 years on the Riders' neg list. The Riders actually invited him to minicamp. He talked at that because he was still looking for an NFL opportunity in April. Finally, when all doors closed, he said to the Riders, all right, I'll come up there. But at that point, Saskatchewan's roster was full. And once a player on a neg list says, okay, you have 10 days to sign him. Saskatchewan didn't. Montreal immediately added him, signed him, and the guy who was fourth or fifth on the depth chart at the start of training camp has now become the starter because of injuries to Jonathan Crompton and Dan Lefevre.
Arash, a big week one win and then a stunning week two loss. How concerned should we be about the Stampeders?
I mean, you shouldn't. You really shouldn't. This is still a championship team that continues to be a championship team. Okay, yeah, you lost Nick Lewis, and yeah, you lost Mo Price. But let's remember, first of all, it's a long season. Secondly, you're going up against a quarterback that you have all of zero film against and know absolutely nothing about. Now, I'm sure John Hoppnagel in his coaches' meetings and the staff in their quarterback meetings and position meetings don't have a grin on their face, but I bet deep down John Hoppnagel does. Because now this is, you know, guys, we're not that good. Guys, this is the way you can now get through to players who may have felt otherwise this was just going to be a cakewalk through the season. You just lost to a rookie quarterback that nobody else wanted. And so this allows you to now kind of light a fire under some of these guys. Is there a concern? There shouldn't be. Injuries aren't that much of a factor. Bo Levi Mitchell is going to be a lot better. That offensive line is intact. There's no panic here, and I think that's just what the doctor ordered, as a matter of fact, as weird as that sounds.
What about the O-line? I mean, there's certainly, you know, youngsters that are in spots and they're talented, but it has not performed anywhere near the level of last year's, albeit just 2 weeks.
Well, it's 2 weeks into the season, and you have a relatively young interior of the offensive line that just had probably its best interior lineman go down to the NFL. And when you consistently hit on first-round draft picks, you have to develop them. You know, this is all part of it. You know, Pierre Laviolette is going to be a better football player with Brett Jones next to him. That's just the reality of the situation. It's early July. They're going to be fine. They're going to develop. They're going to get better. This is just all part of the evolution. I really wonder, guys, now how they're going to start, if they're going to start using Cornish in some different ways in some different spots. Because, you know, they didn't really have him for half the season last year. And the show went on, and that's how Bo Levi was able to, you know, emerge his way. Now will they try and get Cornish out in space a little bit more? Now will they try and get him to the edge a little bit more? You know, you don't want to get away from what you do, but now you can kind of expand the playbook a little bit and do some different things.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because the more we looked at this roster and the potential offense that could be put together on a play-to-play basis, we're thinking, you know, this could be one of the more prolific offenses in the CFL, never mind this year, but maybe of the decade, when you can consider that you could have Fuller and Rogers on the opposite side, that you've got a three-time reigning most outstanding Canadian and MOP in recent years, that, you know, probably could have been one last year if not for games missed. And yet the offense really, they were down 22-0. It took them a while to get going in week one. So you think maybe Cornish catching the ball and getting them, you know, out from behind the O-line into some space would help them?
Well, because then you keep the defense a lot more honest, right? You can't pack the box the way they are expecting Cornish to, you know, be running between the tackles. You want to get him in space. You want to get him to the outside, and that just frees up your whole offense. If Jeff Fuller could find a way to stay healthy too, guys, that changes the dynamic of this receiving core incredibly. I don't know if there's a more dynamic and explosive receiver in the league than Fuller when he's playing, you know, at full speed. We saw that week one against Hamilton in some of the acrobatic grabs. That can happen once the defense is spread out a little bit. I mean, let's go back to the Ryder game yesterday. Why was Trevor Harris able to be so effective? You know, Saskatchewan's throwing three-man. It's a three-man rush going up against him and his own defense behind. I mean, Harris was just able to pick them apart in the secondary. And so if you get into a situation where the defense on the flip side here is going to be packed into the box and they're expecting Cornish for power yardage, suddenly if you get them to the outside, they got to be moved and spread out all over the field, and that changes everything that you do.
Red Blacks 2-0, incredible story. I don't know that they could do it without the injury sustained to quarterback by Montreal in week one, and then week two against a BC team that had a bye in week one, that, you know, we're all waiting to see what exactly they are with a new regime change in terms of the coaching staff. Pretty impressive numbers in a big win. They go up and win 27-16 against the Lions.
Yeah, and look, you look at the heroes of the game, if you will, the receivers that balled out. There was Ernest Jackson brought in this offseason. There was Brad Sinopoli brought in this offseason. There was Sir Vincent Rogers brought in this offseason. We talked in training camp, Ryan, about how the winners of the offseason were the Red Blacks. The personnel upgrades that they have made are significant. It's the new, not only the skilled guys, but the blindside protector of Henry Burris, who's allowing no mess in and around his quarterback. Those have been big, big acquisitions of what they're doing. Burris actually said after the game, we're playing with so much confidence right now, a confidence that team didn't have last year. Henry called it rock bottom for them. And you know what impressed me the most, fellas, for a second-year team playing their second game of the season, was the poise in which they played down the stretch. That was something that was lacking in the Saskatchewan-Toronto game. It was something that lacked by the Stampeders at times in Montreal. It was almost like we've been there, we've done that. There's a, you know, we know how to approach the situation. Let's go about it and let's go do it. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, the world's most unpredictable league. The West now has no teams over 500, and everyone in the East is 500 or better. No one would have seen that one coming.
Let's just remember.
Two weeks. Yeah, no, it's true. It absolutely is. Although, I'm telling you what, if you were in a elimination pool, a loser pool, pick the loser week one, week two, I bet you 90% of the field's out already.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. Here's what will be interesting about Ottawa, guys. They're now on a short week, right? They played Saturday at home. They gave the players yesterday off. they have 2 days of practice, Monday, Tuesday. Then they fly Wednesday to Edmonton to play Thursday. Mm. If they can jump out to a 3-0 start, and they're going up against Matt Nichols, but if they can jump out to a 3-0 start, that changes, you know, the dynamic of everything in terms of what the belief is in that locker room. But what a tall task for a young team to have that as, you know, as the real test so early in the season.
Yeah, and Edmonton's coming off a bye. That tall task indeed. Arash, always a pleasure catching up. Let's follow Vasek here. Hopefully he's got another thrilling ride to the finals like we saw with Eugenie last year.
Thanks, boys. Happy Stampede, huh?